Author Carrie Lazar White is an activist and attorney and also the executive director of a Harlem-based youth services organization. His first novel, Passage, tells the story of Warrior, a young man navigating the snowy winter streets of Harlem and Brooklyn in 1993. Warrior is surrounded by deep family love and a sustaining connection to his history, bonds that arm him as he confronts the urban forces that surround him. Carrie Lazar White will be taking part in an event entitled Writing Boyhood for the New York State Writers Institute. He'll be doing so along with author Reef Larson. They will be at the Standish Room in the Science Library at the University of Albany Uptown Campus at 4:15, and then at 7:30 they will have a presentation and a conversation at the Huxley Theater in the New York State Museum. Again, the name of the new novel is Passage, and it's a pleasure to welcome Carrie Lazar White to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Very nice to have you on the program. What brought you to write the novel?
Passage is a novel that I felt was kind of deep in my core. It just felt like a story I needed to tell. I mean, parts of it are deeply autobiographical and connected to family. Parts of it are connected to the work that I've been engaged in for a long time as a social justice organizer and activist. And so it was a story that just, you know, really felt like it needed to be told, and it combined a lot of elements that, you know, really resonated with me, and the elements of kind of poetry and narrative and different voices intersecting.
In the novel, we meet a young black man named Warrior, and he is working the streets of Harlem and Brooklyn. The year is 1993. Is that pretty much the time frame that you grew up as well?
It's the time frame that I grew up, and it's also the time frame when I began working with young men in Harlem, helping them to find guidance and support and to turn around their lives.
When it comes to that work, what has that lent itself? How do we see that in the novel of all of that social justice work that you have done over the years?
Well, Passage is, you know, it is a novel. It is fiction. It is an imagined story with many different strains that intersect to create a character. Obviously, some aspects of the character, as I said, resonate with my life and family stories that weave throughout. But there are also elements of my work with young men and their journeys, seeing their experiences, the kind of duality of the fear of violence, the desire to be free, seen as a perpetrator of violence when in fact often the recipient of violence, the kind of ambient feeling of danger around the corner that so many young men feel coming up in very tough urban areas, I wanted to convey in the novel. The humanity, the decency, the love that courses through the blood of the main character, I also wanted to convey that he comes from a space of deep family love and deep family support. Yet every day that he leaves his mother's home in Harlem or his father's home in Brooklyn and closes that front door, then he is exposed to, you know, all the socioeconomic ills that we know about in our society and that continue to face young people.
When you think of this book taking place in 93, in the 25 years that has passed for young men and women on the street, how has that fundamentally changed, do you think?
I think some aspects have changed tremendously. I mean, certainly this novel and the story is based in the city of New York, and the level of violence in the 90s, you know, you had in excess of 2,000 murders a year in the city. That number is now, you know, consistently below 400. So that means that the city is much safer. But on the other hand, if most urban cities in Europe had 400 murders in a year, it would be a national catastrophe. I mean, we accept a level of gun violence and violence in America that is not matched almost anywhere else in the world in terms of, you know, quote-unquote developed countries. And so that specter of violence remains. Is it safer in our urban areas? Absolutely. But the danger and the sense of violence remains. The poor education remains. The desperate socioeconomic conditions continue. So I think there's a lot of similarities, even if there are differences. And, you know, because, again, this is a story and a novel, I wanted to weave in themes of magical realism and characters who are real but in another sense representational, mythical characters. So there's an element to the story that's a parable. And so that means that it's telling a story that hopefully could be in almost any period of time, even though this particular story is set in the 90s.
Struck by something that you just said a moment ago of the acceptance of violence, specifically gun violence. Why do you think we accept the amount of violence that we have on our streets, especially in our urban areas?
It's been since its founding. America is a country founded on a narrative of of freedom and justice and equality, but it's been very based in a narrative of violence. America is a country birthed from violence, whether it's the revolution, whether it's the taking of land from indigenous people, whether it's a civil war that fractured the nation, whether it's the myth of the American man in the West with his gun. This is a country that celebrates violence quite directly. And so I think that if you celebrate violence, then your citizens will utilize violence in a very different way than we see in other parts of the world. The numbers show that when you see gun violence in places as divergent as Germany and England and Japan, you simply do not see the levels of violence that you see here. And so the lack of ability to control that narrative once it has been celebrated, I think it infests every part of our society. It's not, of course, just urban areas. Violence is reflected, as we see, in schools and mosques and temples and churches being shot up. I mean, these are not normal occurrences in most of the world.
There is great attention to memory in the novel. Talk a little bit about why you wanted to address that and the importance of memory in our lives.
This is the story of a young black male who's based in the 90s, but he is deeply connected to his family history. And as you say, it's a memory as well. Your history intersects with your memory. So many writers have focused on this intersection of history and memory and lived knowing memory. It is his way out. I mean, understanding his family legacy, understanding what his people have gone through, understanding the history of black people in this country is central to him navigating through the current conditions that he faces. Obviously, in African-American tradition, it's a tradition of the oral tradition of stories being told. And what are stories but family memory and family history? And so it's this belief that to really understand your future and where you need to go, you also have to understand the context of where you have come from. And so memories invade his dreams. They invade his daydreams and his night dreams, whether they are dreams of terror or dreams of beauty. Memory is there. And both of his parents, in different ways, his mother as a teacher, his father as a musician, memory influences how they teach and how they create as artists. And so I think that you cannot truly create art. You cannot truly create a pathway forward without understanding this concept of the intersection of history and memory.
Of course, history is another way of saying our past. And you look at what happens to people who neglect their past, and that you can be cut off. You can go adrift if you are not aware of that past and where you came from.
I believe that our family legacy, who we are as people, can be empowering. Obviously, it can also be debilitating. It depends on the family you come from. It depends on how you're connected to your family legacy. But I think that so often we lose track of those anchors in our life. And people, yes, can become almost unmoored. You're just kind of floating in the sea by yourself. And I think there's a level of disconnection in our time now that so many people face. So many people feel disconnected, feel a desire for a sense of belonging, the things that was the connective tissue so often in our community. And so what I'm trying to do in this story that, you know, has elements of prose and poetry kind of woven throughout is to show that if one is not connected, that one can become lost. And so what pulls the main character back in the end is a connection to his family, to his people, which he considers really almost his sense of spirituality, that family for him and history and legacy is a spiritual, religious connection.
When you look at this character, your protagonist, Warrior, you see a young man who certainly feels that past is very near, and it is shaping him and it is informing him. Tell us a little bit about him and the ultimate journey that he goes on in this dystopian landscape?
I think that's an apt word, dystopian. Others have used it for the novel as well. It's, again, you know, representational and also magical in certain ways. And so the novel begins with a metaphorical death. It ends with a metaphorical birth. There are seven chapters with obviously the clear, you know, allusion to the days of creation and of rest. You know, what is real and what is dream are very much, again, interconnected. He is a character who's filled with love. He loves his sister. He loves his mother. He loves his father. You hopefully sense that as a reader, that he is a sweet boy in certain ways, and yet he has to be a strong man in other ways. And so what does it do to the psyche to be seen as a threat of violence when actually, again, you are experiencing violence? What does it mean to walk the streets wondering, your parents wondering whether you will return home? What does it mean to be gentle with people you love and then have to put on that mask of toughness that so many young men have to wear in the urban spaces? And so I wanted the character to be a complex character, not somebody who could be put in a neat box, but filled with nuance and layers. And so he is haunted, and yet he is unbelievably grounded. I wanted those contrasts to be there. And I think he represents all too many of our young men in our society and the struggles that they face. He finds a way out. I mean, I think it's a deeply hopeful novel in the end, but first one must kind of come to terms with what he has to face and what we allow as a country for teenagers and young people to face. Again, the kind of issues we've talked about in terms of the specter of violence and poor education and the inequity that continues in this country, that we allow children to face that. What does that trauma do to children? What are the lasting effects of those forms of trauma, of racism and of oppression that continue in this country?
Kari Lazar-White's new novel is Passage. He is going to be speaking along with Reef Larson for a New York State Writers Institute event at the Standish Room in the Science Library at 4:15 on Thursday afternoon, and then at 7:30 in a program at the Huxley Theater at the New York State Museum. You can find out more information on our website, wamc.org/roundtable. Kari Lazar-White, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much. Be well. Again, the name of the new novel is Passage. It is published by Seven Stories Press. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.